fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. The defending champion Golden State Warriors beat the host Cleveland Cavaliers on Wednesday night, 110-102, to take a commanding 3-0 lead in the best of 7 National Basketball Association Finals. Golden State star Kevin Durant scored a playoff career-high 43 points and also had 13 rebounds and 7 assists.
We struggled to shoot the ball early on, and I felt like I had some good looks, and you know, I just started asking for more of them, and you know, I was able to knock down some shots for us.
Durant knocked down one of his biggest shots with about 50 seconds left in the game. It was a crucial three-pointer from 33 feet out with the shot clock winding down. Cleveland's Kevin Love says it was like deja vu since Durant hit a similar long-range shot in Game 3 of last year's NBA Finals.
You know, I think that we fought very hard. Our schemes have been there. I know that KD had one of his games that'll go on his highlight reel, and one that was incredible even by his standards.
Meanwhile, Cleveland coach Tyronn Lue had this to say about Kevin Durant at the post-game news conference.
One of the best one-on-one players in our league, top two best players in our league, and you know, holding Steph to 11 points and Clay to 10, you know, you would think you would win that game. So the guys did a good job on those two guys. And, you know, I thought Durant hurt us, you know, with his one-on-one, you know, getting to the free throw line a little bit. But his one-on-one ability really, you know, saved him again tonight.
Tyronn Lue's coaching counterpart for the reigning NBA champion Warriors is Steve Kerr.
We should probably go back to Kevin Durant, shouldn't we? That was amazing what he did out there tonight. Some of those shots, I don't think anybody in the world can hit those but him. He was incredible.
LeBron James has also had some incredible performances during the NBA playoffs. LeBron had 33 points, 10 rebounds, and 11 assists in Game 3, but it wasn't enough to overcome Kevin Durant and the Warriors.
The margin of error is very low. I mean, you can't, you know, it's almost like, you know, playing the Patriots. You just can't have mistakes. They're not going to beat themselves, you know. So, you know, when you're able to either force a miscue on them, you have to be able to capitalize, and then you have to be so in tune and razor sharp and focus every single possession. You can't have miscommunication. You can't have loss. You can't have my faults or my bads and things like that, because they're going to make you pay.
That's LeBron James talking about playing against the NBA champion Golden State Warriors. The Warriors can wrap up their third NBA title in 4 years with a victory Friday night in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. We're now only 7 days away to the kickoff of the World Cup football tournament in Russia. And how about another fun World Cup fact for our VOA listeners? 7 is also the number of days the World Cup trophy went missing when it was stolen before the 1966 tournament in England. A dog named Pickles, being taken out for a walk by the owner in South London, discovered the trophy wrapped in some newspapers at the bottom of some bushes a week after it was taken. Meanwhile, Gianni Infantino, the president of World Football's governing body FIFA, is very confident about Russia's readiness to host the World Cup.
Yes, 1 week before kickoff, I think we can say that Russia is 100% ready, and the whole world will actually see it in 1 week when we kick off on the 14th. Of June with Russia, Saudi Arabia.
The Russia-Saudi Arabia match will be played at Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow. The stadium will also be the venue for the World Cup final on July 15th. Meanwhile, the World Cup-bound Super Eagles of Nigeria lost to the Czech Republic Wednesday 1-0 in their final friendly warm-up match before Russia 2018. Chelsea defender Tomas Kalas scored the game's only goal in the 25th minute in Austria. The loss to the Czechs came 4 days after Nigeria lost to England 2-1 in another friendly played at Wembley Stadium in London. Steve Oruruo is the former chairman of Rangers International Football Club, a Nigerian professional league side. Reporter Iron Mike Imbonye asked him for his thoughts on the international friendlies played by Nigeria ahead of the World Cup.
Well, I think we have had a numerous number of matches in terms of preparation for the World Cup, which I may begin with the interesting one. Nigeria managed to premier Argentina by 4-2, and it was actually played in Russia. So if there's any hint of luck that the land will give Nigeria, it seems it ended up being the example. And we considered 2 goals recover from the shock and hit back, hit them by 4 goals, and it ended 4-2 in favor of Nigeria. If we also look at it, the goalkeeping problem also reared its ugly head in that particular encounter. And if there was any doubt as to whether we are challenged by a goalkeeping problem, it was that match that provided it. But thank God the team responded. Then after that, we've also had friendly matches against Poland that we defeated them by a long goal to nothing. In a game, we actually did not dominate in terms of balance of play. But at the end of the day, we managed to eke out a 1-0 victory. And in the next one against Serbia, our fears also manifested. And the team lost by 2-0. A team not known for losing too many matches. And after that, we went ahead to play another draw against Congo in Nigeria. And then we moved on again to the next friendly match, which was against England. And the team had a catastrophic first half. In the first half, they capitulated completely, but responded massively in the second half. I felt we could have taken something out of that second half. A lot of positives. We won by a goal to nothing in the second half. Never mind that the final score ended by 2-1. And in the very last match yesterday, the team also started very poorly in the first half, and also ended up very, very well without getting a goal. So the cutting edge, having told round the various friendly matches, we need to also look at the team by department. First of all, I think we have resolved the question of goalkeeping. We have a choice. The coach has made up his mind for a goalkeeper, and I think I'm standing with him. He has a touring frame, may be playing in third division, you know, for Deportivo La Coruña, but he's consistent. He knows the basics in goalkeeping. He makes himself large on one-on-one. He is very good in routine balls and wins a lot of things too.
Having talked about the goalkeeping department, can we come to the defense, midfield, and attack?
The truth is that in the defense, again, we started with what we call Oyibo Wall here, and talking about Leon Balogu and William Trostekong. They have been a very impregnable pair. They look very solid in the qualifiers. But for the friendly matches, especially the very few ones we played now, the team is beginning to look as if they can't find their rhythm in the heart of the defense. The defense is beginning to look shaky. Some of the players are looking tired. And from the full-back position again, in modern-day football, we talk about the wing-backs. From the right side of it, Shehu has been battling with Ebueyi, who has been very offensive in the second half. But Nigerians also should understand that in the second half, in most of the friendlies, we have opted for 3-5-2 formation that allows the wing-backs to fly. So in the first half, they sit back in a 4-4 or in a 4-5-1 formation or in a 4-4-1-1 formation. So it doesn't allow the fullback to actually move. But again, in the left side of that defense, I think we have had the boy who came from Russia, talking about Brian Edo. He has also been very enterprising, but his finishing has also been very poor. What he can create within the last third of the pitch has been the problem with him. In terms of marking, he has the strength, he's full of running, but he doesn't deliver the deadly balls that should provide the cutting edge for the strikers to bury. So that's where we have problem again. And that reminds us that a certain Ola Aina shouldn't have been dropped for me. A person I watched play for the England under 20 until they won the trophy. He was a super regular and he played about 34 matches for Hull FC. So no defender in the lineup of Eagles had a steady progression like he did within the last season. So I think dropping him for a player who is versatile, can play in different roles in that defense, is also suspect.
Some analysts think that locally based Nigerian players should have been part of the 23-man list of the Super Eagles. What's your take on this?
I'm not a proponent of that. I'm not an apostle of that. Any Nigerian player playing within the boundaries of this country is a potential foreign-based player in the next second. So long as they get any offer from obscure countries, from Cyprus to Malta, from Malta to Cape Verde or to any other place in the world, Nigerians are willing to go there to play. So if the best legs are going to Sudan, it becomes embarrassing. So for me, the time has come and gone when we had the likes of Finidi George playing for Ajax, playing for Ajax of Port Harcourt. In 2 weeks from Ajax to Ajax, he made the Ajax first team that eventually won the Champions League. Same with Juan Cuadrado and a good number of others. So these days, our league is not looking very strong because of the exodus of players and how half-baked they are before leaving. So the home-based players technically are not ready.
That's Steve Oruro, the former chairman of Rangers International Football Club, a Nigerian professional league side. And Steve was talking with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Enugu, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The Super Eagles of Nigeria will kick off their World Cup campaign June 16th when they play Croatia in Kaliningrad, Russia. Let's take a quick look at the opening World Cup matches for the four other Russia-bound African teams. In Group A, the Pharaohs of Egypt will play Uruguay June 15th in Yekaterinburg, Russia. As I mentioned on Wednesday's show, June 15th is also the 26th birthday of Egypt's injured Liverpool star, Mohamed Salah, the 2017 African Footballer of the Year. And I know many Egyptian fans are hoping Salah will be ready to play against Uruguay on his birthday. On Wednesday, the Pharaohs lost to Belgium 3-0 in a World Cup warm-up match played in Brussels. Egypt was held goalless for the second time in three matches, showing how much the Pharaohs miss the attacking prowess of the injured Mighty Mo Salah. I want to see Mighty Mo Salah in action in Russia. In Group B, the Atlas Lions of Morocco will meet Iran June 15th in St. Petersburg, Russia, in their opening World Cup match. In Group G, the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia will take on England June 18th in Volgograd, Russia, in their first World Cup match. Now, in rankings released Thursday by FIFA, the Tunisians were once again the top-ranked team in Africa and number 21 overall. At number 2 in Africa and number 27 overall is World Cup-bound Senegal. The Senegalese will play Poland June 19th in Moscow in their first World Cup match. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Football is a passion throughout Africa, so it's natural when African immigrants come to the USA, they often form grassroots leagues for fellowship and fun. Football is also a way to stay in touch with the homeland. Teams often are loosely organized around countries of origin. VOA's Adam Phillips attended a championship game in New York City's historic Harlem neighborhood and filed this report.
It's late on a golden Sunday afternoon in Harlem, which is located on the northern part of Manhattan Island. The African Association League championship game between Mali in red jerseys and Burkina Faso in blue is underway. Boubacar Sarre, who emigrated from Mali, is about to take the field.
I'm very happy to play, to give my best for my team.
Does this remind you of home? Is there a lot of soccer, football at home?
Yes, a lot of soccer play at home. Sometimes I feel alone because my family live over there in Mali, so sometimes I miss them. I feel so alone, but when I play the soccer game, I feel better. I feel like $1 million.
But Sare says he's also grateful to be in America, challenges and all.
I go to school to meet many friends and I learn English. That was my dream before, to come to the United States and I can make money to support my family over there.
Abubakar Sako played forward for the Burkina Faso team. He says he and some of his teammates hope one day to support their families through football, which is called soccer in the U.S. He keeps watch for talent scouts.
First of all, we got to work to support our family back in the country. And at the same time, our dream is to be a professional soccer player and play in the big team like Real Madrid or something like that. But we got to start from the bottom first and trying to join small team, even college. Because I play for a college team.
So that's a way of doing your passion, but doing it the American way, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Mali-born Amidou Haidera is president of the African Association League, which organized today's competition. He agrees that football or soccer is a promising pathway to success for some immigrants.
Well, I hope so, but you know, we not doing it for, you know, to gain something out of it. We just like try to, you know, get people involved, you know, do a little exercise. That's it. Get together, get to know each other. That's the most important thing, you know. I'm from Mali. As you can see, like Mali is playing against Burkina. Because Ivory Coast, it was participating. Senegal, Guinea, you know, Sierra Leone, there was other teams, you know. It's not only Mali, just like the whole African nations. We all one family, big family, happy family, you know. We do things together, you know. It's about community, the whole community, not Mali, but the whole African community.
Saka Bagayan coaches the Burkina Faso team. He says he gets community building lessons from the sport that can also help him off the field.
For instance, I'm in financial services, and I learned about leadership by being here and leading these guys. And it's very difficult to lead these guys. And I learned a lot of patience, empathy, and which is great. And I take it to my career.
And what do they think they're learning?
I think they're learning to be part of a team, to be a team player, this guy. And they're also learning to accept each other, which is valuable. They take it within, similarly to their job.
Mohamed Touré, another coach, says that camaraderie and community are already familiar features of many African cultures. In contrast, he says, American culture generally takes an every-man-for-himself approach in work and in play.
Yes, everybody depends on about yourself. Back home, it's not like this. You know, then making sure you know everybody okay. Player, somebody got injured, then everybody have to collect money, then give it to that person. We are, you know, try to have a like family.
Philosophy aside, the game continued. And while neither team scored, Mali took the trophy for winning more games than other teams in the league during the season. To judge by the ready handshakes and easy laughter between players at the end, the league's common goal of camaraderie, fellowship, and sport was achieved. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Thanks, Adam. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Here in Washington, the city's professional ice hockey team, the Washington Capitals, are on the cusp of lifting their first ever Stanley Cup trophy. With a win later Thursday night against the host Vegas Golden Knights in the western U.S. state of Nevada, the Capitals will win the championship. My VOA colleague Jim Stevenson tells us more.
After 44 years of skating in the National Hockey League, the Washington Capitals are on the verge of winning their first ever Stanley Cup.
We've done a great job of not getting ahead of ourselves. We haven't been getting too high or too low, whether the other team scores, we score, we win, or they win. We've been pretty level-headed through this whole thing, and it seems like everyone's just really excited to go out for their next shift and get the job done.
TJ Oshie, who scored twice Monday in a huge 6-2 win over the Vegas Golden Knights to take a commanding 3-1 series lead in the best-of-seven finals. Goalie Braden Holtby has been growing more dominant in the net as his confidence builds and past adversity fades.
Anytime there's adversity, if you take the right
the right mindset and support yourself, surround yourself with the right people, you can come out stronger. And it's fun. That's why we play. It's to try and challenge yourself in different areas to see what you can push yourself through. And our group has done that as a whole this year, too.
Oshie seems to be making impossible shots off balance and from his knees. He's not sure how he does it, but the experience goes back to when he was a kid.
A lot of time in the backyard, rollerblades, sticking on through leaves, maybe. I don't know. It's just something that I sometimes find ways to do. Half the time I don't even really know what's going on, and it just ends up on the stick. So played soccer before the game last two games. Maybe that's helped me.
As the fans in Washington savor the moment and rally around the club, the players are right in the middle of the fans. Oshie rode the Washington Metro subway to the arena before Game 5.
I had a little mishap today. I'm not going to name him, but someone that borrowed me one of their cards only had 35 cents on it. So Metro, I'm not sure exactly how much that ride was, but I owe you big time.
It's been a long, tough road for the Washington Capitals, who have faltered so many times in the past.
We're trying to write our own story here, and it seems like the rest of the city is on board with that. So we're gonna go about our business. We don't really dwell on the game before, let alone the things that have happened in years past. There's been heartbreak here, we know that. But I think that's kind of scarred over and has made us a little stronger for it. We'll just keep pressing on, keep working, and try to do something pretty cool here.
Whether it's Golden State or Cleveland holding the NBA trophy, both teams seem united. They will not go to the White House in Washington to celebrate.
No matter who wins this series, no one wants to invite anybody, so it won't be Golden State or Cleveland going.
On Monday, President Donald Trump had disinvited the Philadelphia Eagles from what was to be a celebration of their Super Bowl victory and relabeled it a celebration of the American flag. On May 31st, the Eagles said 81 members of the organization, including players, coaches, management, and support personnel, had committed to attend. But media reports say as few as 5 to 10 players had planned to attend. Spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders said the event was changed because the Eagles had tried to change their scheduled visit.
If this wasn't a political stunt by the Eagles franchise, then they wouldn't have planned to attend the event and then backed out at the last minute. And if it wasn't a political stunt, then they wouldn't have attempted to reschedule the visit when they knew that the president was going to be overseas. And if this wasn't a political stunt, they wouldn't have waited until Monday, well after 1,000 of their fans had traveled and taken time out of their schedules to offer only a tiny handful of representatives to attend the event.
Trump said Monday the Eagles disagreed with his insistence that all NFL players proudly stand for the national anthem as a tribute to the military and country.
The president thinks that people should stand for the national anthem, particularly when it comes to the NFL. It's not about a particular team. It's about having pride in our country and about being respectful to the men and women who have fought and died to preserve our country.
All Eagles players, however, stood for the anthem last season, despite kneeling protests by players on other teams. The incident seems to have set the tone across all sports regarding the immediate future of the tradition of visiting the White House after winning a championship.
Winning a Super Bowl or winning a Stanley Cup or winning a World Series or winning an NBA championship or a national championship is way bigger than getting invited to the White House.
Thorbjørn Olsen of Denmark now has 5 European golf titles on his resume, but his latest is something new for him.
To come from behind and win, I haven't tried that in my career so far, so that was very special.
Olsen prevailed by 1 shot over Francesco Molinari of Italy at the Italian Open.
It means the world, obviously. These are the biggest tournament we play besides the majors. And there's just a different atmosphere, I think, with all those players, and you can feel you're coming to a Rolex series when you play. And that makes it even more special for me to stand on top and to get that win.
Molinari, coming off a win at the BMW PGA Championship, nearly pulled off a second straight win, but was happy he was in contention.
I gave him my best, and I was a little bit low on energies early in the week, as I said. Yesterday, today, I felt great, feeding off the crowds.
Italian golfer Francesco Molinari. And thanks to my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson, for that spicy sports report. Finally, here's a quick sunny side of sports salute to American Sloane Stephens and the Romanian Simona Halep. They've advanced to Saturday's ladies singles final at the French Open in Paris. And that wraps up the June 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Wojciech Zorniak. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
In another sign of the United States' determination to help the nations of Africa combat terrorism, millions of dollars in rewards are being offered for information on several top leaders of the Al-Qaeda-linked Somalia-based terrorist organization Harakat Shabab al-Mujahideen, or Al-Shabaab. The group, listed as a foreign terrorist organization since 2008, is battling that nation's government for control of Somalia and has also carried out a string of attacks in Kenya. It is responsible for the deaths of thousands of Somali civilians, peace activists, international aid workers, journalists, and civilians, as well as African Union peacekeepers who are helping to restore stability and prosperity to the region. Tens of thousands of people have been forced to flee their homes amid the fighting. Under the terrorist designation, the United States imposed financial and other restrictions on the group, blocking property and prohibiting U.S. persons from engaging in transactions with its members. Now the U.S. is offering rewards for information leading to the location of five of its leaders. Rewards of up to $5 million each are offered for information on the location of Fuad Mohammed Khalaf, a dual Somali and Swedish national, also known as Fuad Sangale, and Bashir Mohammed Mahmoud, an Al-Shabaab military commander believed to have been born between 1979 and 1982. A reward of up to $3 million is offered for information on the location of Abdullah Yare, the head of media for Al-Shabaab. The U.S. guarantees that all credible reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them. If you have information on any of these men, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. Embassy and the tip line at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net. In North America, call 1-800-877-3927.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Ebola is not a curse or spiritual infection. It is a deadly disease, a fever spread by contact with the body fluids of infected people. I am Dr. Kande Greaves. Its symptoms start with a fever, fatigue, and muscle pain. Within a few days, vomiting and diarrhea sets in, and victims lose about 4 liters of body fluid each day. Ebola is highly infectious. If you experience any of these symptoms, seek medical help immediately. You must wash your hands regularly. Do not eat or handle bushmeat. Stay away from people suffering from Ebola. And do not handle the bodies of Ebola victims. If you have had contact with someone who has Ebola, you need to have your temperature monitored daily for any change. Early diagnosis and treatment is critical to your survival. Learn the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, managing editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.